Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Vansir, Ruven Hoffman, Bari Hoffman, Harav Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about a couple of developments in Israel and how we reacted to it with a Hebrew video. The Israeli Election Committee decided to ban the Knesset candidacy of Baruch Marzel. The Israeli Knesset's the Israeli parliament, and Baruch Marzel is running for the Knesset now on the Yachad party with Eli Yishai, Yoni Shetbun, and other people that he's joined up with. And they decided to ban Baruch Marzel's candidacy. Now, we did a video protesting the fact that they're banning Baruch Marzel's candidacy and announcing that if they try to ban Baruch Marzel, we're going to lead protests and we're going to support Baruch Marzel against any ban. And we did a video strongly explaining why it's a complete injustice and an outrage to try to ban Baruch Marzel. Why is this significant? It's significant, first of all, because don't forget we have a history with Baruch Marzel, that's not a very good history. I gave him tens of thousands of dollars for his previous Knesset campaigns. I sent him tens of thousands of dollars. And I did everything I could to help him and support him, and all of a sudden he started in 2006, for a period of years, starting in 2006. He went around spreading the lie that I'm not really banned from Israel, that I can make Aliyah anytime I want, and I'm not banned from Israel, that I was not banned from Israel, that all of that's a lie, and that I can go anytime I want to Israel. And of course, not only does that lie make me look like a terrible person, worse than that, what he was saying undermines my campaign to get into Israel, because then nobody wants to help me. Everybody thinks, wow, you're not really banned, and, you know, it's hard for me to get support so that people will help me to overturn the ban and will help me to get into Israel. So he was undermining my campaign to get into Israel. He was undermining my efforts to overturn this terrible injustice that was done to me. And there was no reason for it. I never did one bad thing to him, never said one bad thing about him. I've never even met him. I've spoken to him on the telephone. On numerous occasions, but I've never actually personally met him face to face. And the only thing he knows about me is that I sent him money and that I supported him. So I was rather astounded when people were coming back from Israel telling me, oh yeah, he says you're not even banned. And there are people on our forum, by the way, there are even people that are on our English and our Hebrew forums who met with him and heard this from him. And he also sent people. He sent his people all over the internet to spread this all over the internet. Chaim Ben Pesach is not really banned. So all the videos I did explaining how I'm banned and trying to build public opinion against my banning so that I could get into Israel, all of that was undermined by this. I mean, he made me out to look like some liar who isn't really banned and that this is all just a game that I'm playing. It was terrible. Anyway, so we had a big dispute about this. And, of course, I also have some major disagreements with him. I disagree with him on his decision to link up with Eli Yishai and Yoni Shetbun. I didn't know just how left-wing Eli Yishai was. But after discovering that Eli Yishai supported the Oslo agreements and supported Shimon Peres and supported making Peres president of Israel and supported all of the freeing of thousands of Muslim terrorists that Netanyahu did, and in fact pressured Netanyahu before Netanyahu even agreed to free the terrorists, he pressured Netanyahu to free the terrorists. And Eli Yishai said when he was the head of Shas that he personally would negotiate. He wants to personally lead the negotiations and negotiate with Hamas. He wants to negotiate with the Hamas terrorists, which even the leftists in Israel say that they're against, claim that they're against negotiating with Hamas. But he said, no, we should negotiate with Hamas. So, and there are many other many other areas where he did things that were awful. He also told Raviv Drucker, who is a reporter, a television reporter and television analyst in Israel, he told him, he had many conversations with him, and he always said to him in the conversations, I'm a leftist. He told him, I'm a leftist. And Raviv Drucker has openly said this. Raviv Drucker has reported this openly and said, well, Eli Yishai is claiming to be right-wing. He said to me in conversations, numerous conversations we had, that he's a leftist. And apparently, he's had these conversations with many reporters, and they were stunned to all of a sudden see him pretend that he's a right-winger. So I don't think someone like this is someone that can be trusted, and I don't think that Baruch Marzel should be running with someone like this for the Knesset. Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Domo, our great leader, would never have consented to run with somebody like this. With someone who supported Oslo? With someone who supports giving away Jewish land? With someone who supported Shimon Peres, the Oslo criminal who's responsible for the murder of 1,800 Jews because of the crime that Peres initiated by starting these, by inviting Arafat into Israel and doing all these other terrible things? Eli Yishai said in an interview, yes, Oslo, yes, expel the Jews from Hebron, yes, Arafat. That's a quote. Ken Oslo, I'm quoting him now in Hebrew. Ken Oslo, ken pinui Hebron, ken Arafat. That's the quote, which means yes, Oslo, because they asked him to sum up his philosophy. So he said in the interview with the radical left traitor newspaper Haaretz, he said, yes, Oslo, yes, removing the Jews from Hebron, yes, Arafat. That's the quote. That's how he summed up his philosophy. I mean, I would never run with somebody like that, and neither would Rabbi Kahana. And I'm surprised that Baruch Marzel is willing to run with somebody like that. Well, I don't know if I'm surprised, but I'm disappointed. So we have major differences, ideological differences with Baruch Marzel, and of course what he did to me personally is also a major problem. But I did a video saying, when there's a situation like this, that an injustice is done to a Jew, we put all of that aside. Even if I have personal grievances and he did things, he stabbed me in the back and did some terrible things to me, that's all true. But when there's a problem involving our fellow Jews, I put all of that aside. And I said, we protest and we oppose the banning of Baruch Marzel. This is wrong. This is unjust. We will do everything we can to see to it that that ban is overturned. We expect the Israeli Supreme Court to overturn the ban, by the way. I think they will overturn it possibly this week, possibly in the next couple of days. But in fact, they have a hearing on Tuesday, Israel time. Tuesday, they're going to have a hearing on the issue of the banning. I think they're going to overturn it because it's so absurd and so outrageous. But, you know, the attempt to ban Baruch Marzel from running when you have Arab terrorist parties in the Knesset calling for Israel's destruction is obscene beyond description. So I said in the video, I explained, I think, in detail why it's outrageous to ban him and why we will back him. And I warned the leftists, and I warned the Supreme Court and warned the leftists, and leftists do watch our videos, our Hebrew videos. I warned them that if they're going to ban Baruch Marzel, they're doing something that will be a boomerang that will hurt them. I warned them in Hebrew. And I said to them repeatedly, if you do this, all of us are going to unite behind Baruch Marzel. All of us, even those of us like myself who had major differences with him, we're going to completely drop all that. We'll completely unite behind him if you do this to him. If you try to ban him, you do this to him, we're going to completely unite behind him. And so we, I hope, have demonstrated that when Jews are in trouble, even if you have personal grievances and even if injustices were done to you in the past, you've got to do what is right for the Jewish people. You have to stand up for justice. That's what Rabbi Kahana would have done. And he did that many times, even though terrible injustices were done to him by all types of people. And that's what we do, and that's what we in JTF stand for. When injustice is done, when something wrong is about to be done, we're going to take the stand of supporting justice and supporting righteousness, even if we've had major differences or major problems with someone with a Jew who was a victim of that injustice. You know, just to show you how outrageous the attempt to ban him from running is, Arabs from the Arab parties that want to destroy Israel sit on that election committee. They're part of the group making these judgments, passing these judgments. Arabs. The vote was 17 to 16 to ban him. So it was by one vote they banned him, 17 to 16. And if not for the Arabs on that committee, he wouldn't have been banned. The majority of Jews on the committee were against banning him. So he was banned because Arabs are now sitting on election committees. Arabs are now sitting in the Knesset, and according to the polls, they're about to get 12 or 13 seats in the upcoming election for their Jew-hating parties. Arabs sit in the Knesset. Arabs sit on the election committee. You even have an Arab sitting on the Supreme Court. You have Arabs in the court system. The Arabs now in Israel are making decisions to ban Jews. Arabs are now being given the power to ban Jews in the Jewish homeland. Arabs are being given power over the Jews in their own homeland and are using that power to ban Jews. This is an outrage that can't go unanswered. And that's why we spoke up, and that's why we said what we said. There were people in our Hebrew movement in Israel that were stunned that I did this video, because they know what Baruch Marzal did to me. They remember how bitter our differences were, and how he went after me and said these malicious things about me, which people in our Hebrew movement all know that I am banned, and they all saw. I did videos proving with documentation that I am banned, that there's no question that I'm banned. I mean, I showed it on the videos. I also did documentation proving that I sent him a lot of money and that I supported him. So the people in our Hebrew movement, you know, they were surprised that I did this, you know, that I would do this. They thought that I would at least say, well, listen, after what he did to me, they're not going to, you know, after what he did to me, it would be expected that at the very least I wouldn't try to help him in a situation like this. But that, you know, that's not the way it's going to work with us. That's not the way it's going to work with us. When the crunch comes, when there's an emergency or a crunch or a moment of truth, we're going to call for unity, even with people who may have wronged us. That's what JTF stands for. That's what true Kahanists do. Because we love the Jewish people. We love the state of Israel. We love the land of Israel. We love the God of Israel and the Torah. And we are loyal to our principles, even when our personal interests sometimes may be hurt by it. That's the example we want to set for the Jewish people. It's the example our great leader, our great rabbi, Rabbi Kahana, set for us. And we want to live by his very high standard. We need your help in order to get our message out. On this subject and on many other subjects, of course, because we're trying to wake the people of Israel up. We're trying to have an impact on what happens in the upcoming election on March 17th. You know, we've done videos. Some of our videos that we've done, by the way, on the election campaign have tens of thousands of views already on YouTube. Some of the videos we did against, for instance, Bougie Herzog, who's the head of the Labor Party, who's running for prime minister, have gotten huge numbers of views. So our message gets out and reaches people. We have the ability to get out and reach people, and we're reaching tens of thousands of voters. That's enough to change a couple of seats in the Knesset. So it's important. The more people we reach, the better. The more people we can wake up, the better. And so we need your help. You understand how important it is that our message be heard. You understand that you, our fellow JTFers who have been loyal to us and who have been with us all these years, you understand the importance of this message. And so help us. How do you help us? Well, first of all, when you see us put up Hebrew or English videos, you like the videos, you comment on the videos, you spread the word and promote the videos, you do whatever you can do on YouTube and on Facebook to let people know and to bring people to the videos, to bring our message to as many people as possible. Secondly, please join. Please don't put this aside. Please join our great news pages. If you speak Hebrew, join our Hebrew news page, hayamin.org. If you don't speak Hebrew, then at least join our English news page, jtf.org, our great English news page that Shlomo, our fantastic, brilliant administrator, he puts up 5, 6, 7, 8 articles a day. I mean, there are constant updates. You will definitely learn something new that you didn't know before on our news page. Every single day. You should go there at least once a day. You will learn something new. You should join the news page, comment on it, participate on the news page, jtf.org. It is the best, I believe it's the best news page, the most informative and the best and the most important news page you can go to anywhere on the internet. And that's thanks to our great admin, Shlomo. So help us with our videos, help us promote them, help us with our news page. And last but not least, the third thing, which is very, very important, vital to us, of course, is that we need financial support. That's always been our downfall. We reach a nice number of people here with a very limited budget. If we didn't have such a limited budget, we would reach much more. The more support we have, the more people we reach, the more effective we can be. It's as simple as that. And I know you want us to succeed, so help us. Help us. God will bless you. I don't know when. I'm not a prophet, and I'm not able to tell you exactly when, but there's no doubt when you do something good, it's always beneficial. It's always the right thing to do good things. And so we need your help. Checks, money orders, cash donations sent through the regular mail to our post office box. It makes a difference. Every donation really does make a difference. And if you prefer, if you feel it's more convenient and you prefer to do it online with your credit card, all you have to do is go to our Hebrew page, our Hebrew main page, which is hayamin.org. You go to hayamin.org. On top, everything is in Hebrew on that page, except on top you'll see a donate button. And you just click on the donate button in a couple of minutes, very conveniently through PayPal, you can donate to our organization. Whether you want to do it through the regular mail, by sending checks or money orders or cash donations to our P.O. box, or whether you want to do it online through PayPal, it makes no difference to us, no difference whatsoever. Either way is just as good. We need your help. God bless the great JTFers who are helping us on a regular basis, generously helping us. God bless you. And let's hope we can make the impact that we want to make. Let's hope we can influence things in a positive way. I think this week we did have a positive influence already, because we're setting an example, a good example for Jews, showing that even if somebody's feuding with you and you're innocently attacked, sometimes it's important on an issue of principle for you to say, okay, you did me wrong, you attacked me, I'm going to put that aside. And I'm going to stand up for what's right. I'm going to stand up for justice for you anyway. I think that's an important lesson. I think it's an important example that we're setting. And I know that there are people who say, oh, Chaim, you're being such a friar. Friar in Hebrew means like a fool, like, you know, that's a term they like to use. The term friar, you know, the term friar in English, they adopted it into Hebrew, but they made it like a jerk, like a fool who just, you know, lets people use him and step on him. There were a couple of people who said, ah, Chaim, ata friar, you're a friar, you're, in other words, you're being a fool, what are you doing, again, you're being nice to these people. I don't look at it that way. I want to do what's right. I want to do, when I see injustice, I want to protest that injustice. And I want us to stand for what's right. Of course, there's a limit to everything. You know, if somebody informs on you, or somebody's really stabs you in the back and is a complete traitor, then you don't help them. But if somebody does you wrong and you see that you see a terrible injustice being done, I think the first priority for us as a movement should be to do what is in the interest of the Jewish people. By the way, we're not supporting Baruch Marzel for the Knesset. I'm not saying we're supporting him. I would, and it's not that I would be against him sitting in the Knesset. That's not the issue. It's that I'm against the people he's running with. I think the people he's running with are bad people, as I mentioned in the past on this program. I think the people, Eli Yishai and Yoni Shetbun and the other people that he's running with, I think they're bad people. And I'm not willing to support a party where Baruch Marzel gets into the Knesset, okay, and then along with him, four or five bad people, leftists, who are backstabbers and who do terrible things to the Jewish people and who betrayed the Jewish people and supported Oslo, Shas, corrupt Shas people. I'm not willing to put four or five of those bad people in just so that Baruch Marzel gets one seat. I don't think that's a price worth paying. So I don't support that party. I wouldn't vote for that party. But no one has a right to ban Baruch Marzel. He has a right to run. Even if I happen to disagree with his decision to join with them, he still has a right to run, and nobody has a right to ban him from running. So we took a position. That's our principles. That's our principled position. I know there's some people who think I'm being naive and I'm being foolish, but I don't think so. I think when it's a matter of principle and when there's a crunch, when someone does an injustice like this, we have to take the right stand, even if we got hurt in the past on a personal level. We still have to take the right stand. Okay, now let's go to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start out with Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, which black athlete is the most disgusting person on the list? Then there are four people here. We'll go through them one by one. Whatever I know about them, I don't know their whole history, but I know a little bit about each of these individuals. They're all very disgusting. You're asking which is the most disgusting. I don't know. I mean, they're all terrible. It's hard for me to make one worse than the other. I think they're all just absolutely terrible. So I can't really pick one out of the four and say this one's more disgusting than the other ones, because I think all four are just awful. Okay, we started with the Shaquille O'Neal, who's another black Muslim wannabe. He's a black Muslim. He's a basketball player, for those of you who don't know. He has five children, all with Arabic Muslim names, and he wants to be a black Muslim. He's disgusting. I mean, just a disgusting example that he sets for people. Then Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson is a black Muslim boxer. He's a convicted rapist. He's a cocaine addict. He's an alcoholic. He bites other boxers' ears off in the ring in front of millions of people. I mean, he's a cannibal, a convicted rapist, a cocaine addict, an alcoholic. So in other words, he's a true role model for the people who like Al Sharpton and Barack Hussein Obama. And then the third person on the list is Pac-Man Jones. For those of you who don't know, he's a black football player and a wrestler and a hip-hop moron. I don't know everything about him, but I know that he's been arrested for beating women in strip clubs. He goes to strip clubs and then he beats these women up. To me, a man that goes around beating up women is a beast. This isn't a human being. This is a beast. And, you know, this is very common among blacks and Arabs. Most blacks and Arabs do this. And it's a disgusting part of their culture. And finally, the fourth person on the list is O.J. Simpson. Well, for those of you who don't know, he's, of course, a football player, an actor. He was a broadcaster. He was in all the commercials. This is someone who brutally murdered his wife. Brutally murdered with a knife, cut her to pieces, his wife and the mother of his children. And a restaurant waiter who just happened to be there. This restaurant waiter, whose father was Jewish, who just happened to be there, name was Goldman, I believe. He just happened to be there. O.J. Simpson brutally cut these two people to pieces. Just brutally cut them to pieces. Literally cut them to shreds with a knife. He was also convicted, he's in prison now, because he was also convicted of armed robbery and kidnapping. I mean, this is just the lowest. This is someone who was given millions and millions of dollars and became famous and wealthy and was an actor and on the top of the world, a football player on the top of the world. And look at how he behaves. So I think all four of them are the scum of the earth. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. We go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think of the Obama administration sending people to Israel to campaign against Bibi Netanyahu so he wouldn't be reelected, unquote? Well, I think the Obama administration is interfering in Israeli elections, and American administrations have done this all the time. They always interfere in Israeli politics and in internal Israeli affairs. Then if someone in Israel comes here and says something, they say, oh, you're interfering in American politics. You know, it's such hypocrisy. It's a double standard. So, of course, I'm against Obama or anyone else from outside of Israel, people from a foreign government going in and trying to distort the Israeli political process and trying to influence the Israeli political process. It's outrageous. It's another example of how Barack Hussein Obama and John Kerry and his first Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, what anti-Semites they are. Hillary and Bill Clinton also did this. They also sent Jim Carville, who was their main campaign consultant. They sent him to be the campaign consultant against Netanyahu when he ran against Ehud Barak in 1999. So this is something that the Clintons did. This is something that Obama and Kerry are doing. And, of course, it's outrageous and offensive. Thank you, Joe. We go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, your thoughts on Rabbi Abraham Hecht and his statement about leaders should get a death penalty for giving up land. Is that halakha? Unquote. Well, he claimed that under Jewish law, Rabbi Hecht claimed that under Jewish law, if a Jewish leader or any Jew endangers Jewish lives, as Yitzhak Rabin and Shimon Peres were clearly doing there. Of course, they not only endangered Jewish lives, Jews ultimately were murdered. Many Jews were murdered because of what they did in the Oslo agreements. Rabbi Hecht said at the time that a leader like that under Jewish law deserves the death penalty. For legal reasons, Dr. Dan, I'm sure you'll understand, but for legal reasons, I can't give my opinion on this. Believe it or not, there are legal problems under Israeli law. People will have to guess what my opinion is. In America, I could give you my opinion on it. But in Israel, it's actually illegal for me to give you my opinion on whether or not the halakha is that these people should get the death penalty. Rabbi Hecht said that it is the halakha. Harambam, Maimonides, says that it's the halakha. There's no question that there are sources for this. But I can't give you my opinion. I'm not allowed to give you my opinion because under Israeli law, and I could give it to you in the United States, nothing will happen to me. In America, we still have enough First Amendment protections that I could tell you in America without any problem. But we have a movement, Dr. Dan, as you know, in Israel as well. And we're not only law-abiding in America. Our movement in Israel is also law-abiding. So I can't give you my opinion on that issue because it's against Israeli law for me to express my opinion on that issue. People will have to guess. I think, Dr. Dan, you're wise enough to already know, to already be able to guess. Again, we are a law-abiding organization, so I can't even express my views on certain issues. That's how bad Israeli law is on some of these issues. Dr. Dan now writes, two, Dvar Torah. Dvar Torah means to say something about, to have a discussion about something written in the Torah. Well, you know, we recently read about an eye for an eye. Ayin tachat ayin, it says in the Torah. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and so on. And people read that as being literal, and it's not literal in the Torah. That's not what the Torah means. You see, we can't read the written Torah, which is the first five books of the Bible. First five books of the Bible is the written Torah. Torah she bichtav in Hebrew. We can't read or understand any of the commandments there if we don't follow Torah she be'al peh, which means the oral Torah. The oral Torah, the Mishnah, and of course the Talmud, which explains to us the Mishnah. If we don't go to the oral Torah, we understand nothing about the written Torah. Nothing. You can't follow one out of the 613 commandments. There are Taryag Mitzvot, 613 commandments in the Torah. You can't do one of the 613 without the oral Torah. Not one. There's no way you would know how to lay tefillin. There's no way you would know how to observe Shabbat. I mean, there are 39 things we're not allowed to do. 39 examples of melacha that we're not allowed to do on Shabbat. There's no way you would know how to observe Shabbat or know anything about that from the written Torah. There's no hint of that even. Because the written Torah are just the headlines. They're just the spirit of what we're supposed to be doing. The oral Torah goes into all the details. And in the oral Torah, going back to the commandment of an eye for an eye, the oral Torah, it's explained to us that what it means is monetary compensation. In other words, if let's say there's an accident, okay, and by accident somebody, God forbid, takes out somebody's eye. They were negligent or whatever. They didn't intend to do it, but because of their negligence or whatever, somebody loses their eye as a result of this. Let's say it's a boss and one of their workers loses their eye or something of that nature. The Torah doesn't say you go to the person who was negligent and poke their eye out now as retaliation. The Torah does not say that. Now, of course, if somebody did it on purpose, if somebody did something deliberately, that's a different story. Then the penalty can be much more severe. But I'm talking about an eye for an eye. This is discussing even in cases of negligence. You don't go, if somebody, let's say, if somebody's animal, for instance, attacks somebody and scratches their eye out, or attacks them and they lose a tooth, you don't go and knock the tooth out of the person whose animal, the owner of the animal, who didn't intend for that to happen. If the person didn't intend for that to happen, you don't do that. But the owner of the animal or the person responsible for this has to pay monetary compensation, whatever that eye was worth in the life of a person, including the sorrow that the person experiences and the pain and the sorrow. Whatever the tooth was worth, whatever a hand or a leg or something else that could be lost, God forbid, in an accident. Whatever was lost, you have to pay monetary compensation. That's what that means. Now, you had the Code of Hammurabi, which also says an eye for an eye. Under the Code of Hammurabi, though, it's an eye for an eye unless someone is rich enough to buy their way out. In other words, under the Code of Hammurabi, you did actually take the eye out. The Code of Hammurabi is a code that was written in the Middle East before the Torah was given to us. And you have these people that attack the Bible who say, "Oh, you see, they're copying from the Code of Hammurabi." which is so absurd. I mean, that's like saying that if we get into power in Israel and we decide to have the death penalty in Israel, that means that people are going to say, "Oh, you're copying from states in America that had the death penalty." Now, that's ridiculous. Of course there are going to be laws that the nations have that are good laws, that are worthy laws. There are natural laws of nations that are worthy, that what God wants, that God accepts as there are laws that the nations of the world promote, that God does want, and that God does want incorporate into the Torah because they make sense. But the Torah, our Torah, takes those laws and refines them to make them acceptable to God and to bring them up to God's standards. And so we don't poke someone's eye out if by accident they're responsible for someone losing an eye. But we do make them pay monetary compensation. That's what the Torah stands for, and again, in order to understand those things, we must study oral Torah as well. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And we go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "Discuss one symbol of black Islamic friendship, eunuch," unquote. Well, here I think Smash Islam is referring to the fact that the Muslims castrated their black slaves. They had huge numbers of black slaves, and they used to castrate the men. In fact, the black servants and black bodyguards of Arabs and of Muslims were all eunuchs. They used to castrate them. I think some of it is because they didn't trust the black men around their women. But black servants, black bodyguards, black slaves in the Arab and Muslim world were all castrated. And the castration process among Muslims is quite brutal. There's no anesthesia, nothing. They just chop everything off and with no anesthesia. That's it. It's very, very brutal. Very brutal. And these eunuchs, the blacks were turned into eunuchs. That was the so-called respect that Muslims had for black people. And today you have blacks that want to be Muslim. What retarded idiots. No religion or culture did more harm to blacks than Islam. The Muslims started the slave trade. The Muslims murdered millions of blacks in history and enslaved many millions more, raped millions of black women. No culture, no religion ever did more harm, more brutal, savage atrocities against black people than Islam, and the Muslims all and most of the blacks in America want to be Muslim and love the Muslims. Very, very sick. Smash Islam now writes too. Kris Jenner's affair with O.J. Simpson, unquote. Well, Kris Jenner, she did have an affair with O.J. Simpson. You know, she was married at the time to Robert Kardashian, who's another example of decadence and degeneracy. Then she married Bruce Jenner. The reason she has the name Jenner, she married Bruce Jenner. You remember Bruce Jenner? Well, most of you are too young. Bruce Jenner was the TV celebrity and the Olympic athlete who now, by the way, is undergoing a sex change operation. Bruce Jenner is undergoing a sex change operation. What a sick world we live in. Bruce Jenner, he was an Olympic athlete and a TV celebrity with all his money and all his riches, and he was good looking and women loved him, and he wants to become a woman. He wants to have a sex change operation. What a mental case. Anyway, Kris Jenner was married to him, but before that, when she was married to Robert Kardashian, she was having an affair with O.J. Simpson. Just the lowest slut on the face of the earth. Smash Islam now writes, 3. I never knew, Kane, is this Kane or Kanye? I don't even know how to pronounce it, because these names, I have to tell you, Smash Islam, I only know these names from reading the New York Post online. Or from seeing things, you know, because I have to be aware of what the media is saying, and I have to be aware of these things for the sake of our news pages. But I don't know if it's Kane West or Kanye West. I don't know how, I don't even know how you pronounce it. I know I've seen the name many times on YouTube, on websites. Kane West disrupting MTV Awards when whites win, unquote. I didn't even know about this. I didn't even see this, but it doesn't surprise me because Kane West, he's a black rapper, which means a black moron. And I'm not saying all blacks are morons, but all black rappers are morons, that's for sure. Because rappers are morons. It's not music, it's ranting, it's retarded ranting. Anyway, Kane West, the black rapper, he blames Jews. You know that he blames Jews for Obama, for preventing Obama from succeeding? He says the Jews are preventing Obama from succeeding, even though most of the Jews supported this Muslim Jew-hating animal in the White House. All the self-hating Jews who helped Obama. This is the thanks they get, that this black Jew-hater goes and he says, the Jews, they're not doing it. It's because of the Jews. With all their money, I don't have the money and the connections that the Jews have. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's the scum of the earth. Thank you, Smash Islam. We go now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, please discuss Whitney Houston, Maxine Waters, and the possible closet homosexual Dr. Dre. Compare Kwanzaa and Ramadan, unquote. Okay, so we got quite a bit on the plate here. From Lewinsky Stinks. Whitney Houston, well, she's a black singer, for those of you who don't know, so-called singer. And one of the interesting things about her, I remember when she went to Israel, she immediately visited the black Hebrews in Dimona. She visited the black Hebrews, who, by the way, they're allowed to go on Aliyah. Blacks who say that all whites are devils and that the Jews are imposters and the only real only black welfare recipient criminal dogs from Chicago, from the slums of Chicago, they're the only real Jews. They're allowed to go to Israel and spread their poison and hate and Nazi-like hatred for the Jewish people. Thousands of them have been allowed to go to Israel. I'm banned, of course, though. I'm banned. Anyway, Whitney Houston, she supported the black Hebrews. And I remember she refused to shake Ariel Sharon's hand and because he's not a real Jew, and only the black Hebrews, they're the real Jew. I mean, what a racist, what an animal she was. Maxine Waters, she's a black congresswoman, for those of you who don't know, a racist and Jew-hating black congresswoman. She always attacks Israel, always defends Iran, always defends the Muslim terrorists, always defends Islam. In other words, she's a member in good standing of the Congressional Black Caucus. And Dr. Dre, another black rapper, another moron. He's another one who's always arrested for beating women. He's been arrested over and over again for beating women. You know, they love beating on women. Just beasts. This piece of subhuman excrement is worth $270 million, according to Forbes magazine. At least that's what the New York Post said. I remember seeing an article. I don't remember when, but he's worth $270, $280 million. He gets all that money, this mental midget with an IQ in the single digits who runs around beating women all over the place, just beating women and bragging about it and saying, I don't let nobody mess with me, with his dirty, filthy mouth. He's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. What a world. What a world we live in. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. We go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, you didn't bring it up last week. Please comment on Barack Hussein Obama insulting Christianity, but not Islam. No question about it. He is a Muslim, unquote. Oh, of course he's a Muslim. Of course. I mean, every time Muslim terrorists murder people, he starts attacking the Jews, the Christians, everybody but the Muslims, and starts defending the Muslims. In other words, his response to Islamic terrorism is to defend Islam and defend the Muslims. That's how he responds. Of course he's a Muslim. By the way, I didn't read your question right. You said, please comment on Barack Hussein Osama insulting Christianity but not Islam. I didn't read it right. It's Barack Hussein Osama, and you're very right. That is the correct name for this beast. Of course he's a Muslim. Of course he's a Muslim. But Chicago Jew, how could it be that the majority of the American people twice voted to put this person in the White House? What type of country has this become? Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go to Papercut now, who writes, and I quote, Chaim discussed the Temple Institute's teaching Kohens to make the temple showbread once again. How long until Temple 3, unquote. Yes, the Temple Institute does some good work, and they're teaching, HaKohanim, of course, are the priests, and teaching them how to make the showbread, and teaching them many of the other important things that are done in the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, is very good work and very important, and it's something that we have to know. How long until the third temple? I can't tell you, Papercut, because unfortunately I'm not a prophet, so I can't tell you. I can tell you that, of course, we pray for it every day, we dream about it, and if we were in power, which is also seems like a long way away right now, but if we were in power, and someday people like us will be in power, that's for sure, we would start building as much as we could build in the areas where it's safe to build. We can't build yet the entire third temple until we know through prophecy exactly where Kodesh HaKodashim is, exactly where the Holy of Holies is, because we're not allowed to build in the Holy, we're not allowed to build as far as the Holy of Holies. So we would have to go to the rabbis and consult with them and the rabbinic experts and rabbinic sages and see where it is safe to build, where we're not trampling on the Holy of Holies, where it is clearly safe to build, and we would start building over there. In other words, we'd prepare. You know, King David made all the preparations for the building of the temple, even though God told him he can't build it. He prepared everything for King Solomon, his son, to eventually build, for Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, to build. David HaMelech, King David, he prepared everything for him in his lifetime, and that's one of the great attributes of King David, one of the reasons why God loved King David so much. Thank you, Papercut. We go now to Mansch, who writes, and I quote, leftists rationalize the Muslim barbarism, quote, we can't hold people to standards that we've only developed and evolved over the last 50 years, unquote. Yeah, well, the leftists think they invented everything. You know, that's complete nonsense. First of all, the standards of the leftists are ridiculous standards. They don't have moral standards. They're very immoral. And the leftists are enablers of Muslim barbarism. And, of course, when they make excuses for the Muslim terrorists and say, well, they, you know, what do you expect? They have a different culture. They have different... They never say that, by the way. If Israel does something, they never say, well, the Jews have a different... The Jews are held to the... You know, most exacting standards, because to a double standard, a Jew-hating double standard, because the leftists hate the Jews, and including the Jewish leftists. The Jewish leftists also hate the Jewish people, are also anti-Semites. Of course, this is hypocrisy to say that we've only developed and evolved these standards over the last 50 years. It's nonsense. Morality has always existed. Knowing the difference between right and wrong has always existed. People have always had free will to choose between right and wrong. So it's an absurd argument. And the fact that the leftists say Muslims are allowed to get away with being barbaric mass murderers and Nazi beasts because, after all, that's their culture. They don't understand our culture. You know, that type of... It shows the type of sick, demented, vile thinking that the leftists have and how and why it's so important that we defeat them. Thank you, Mensch. We go now to Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, Reb Chaim, and I quote, Reb Chaim, can you tell us some of Rabbi Kahana's predictions that have not yet come true? Thank you, unquote. Well, Rabbi Kahana, let's see, he predicted, of course, that Kahanists are going to come to power someday in Israel, which certainly will happen. There's no question that people who have the right thinking and who believe in God and want to follow the Torah and want to follow what the truth says, they will come to power. That hasn't come true yet. He also, there were bad predictions that we've seen. A lot of his bad predictions did come true. Things like Oslo and welcoming Yasser Arafat, all of that. He predicted all of that, which happened after he was murdered. But he told us all of that was going to happen, and people mocked him for saying those things. He said, if you don't support me, we're going to get Arafat. But he also predicted that much worse things could happen. He predicted there could be a Holocaust. A Holocaust against Jews in the United States, he predicted. There could also be a Holocaust in Israel. Israel cannot be destroyed. There are 6 million Jews in Israel. Israel will never be completely destroyed. The building of the third state of Israel, which is what we have, the third Jewish state, is permanent, is eternal. This state of Israel will never be destroyed completely. But that doesn't mean that you can't have huge losses. What if Iran develops nuclear bombs and fires nuclear missiles on Israel, God forbid? You could have hundreds of thousands or even a couple of million Jews murdered in a situation like that, God forbid. If there's a so-called Palestinian state, you could have a huge percentage of the Israeli population could be murdered, God forbid. So Rabbi Kahana always warned that there was a danger of that, of large numbers of Jews being murdered, of a Holocaust against Jews, both in Israel and in the exile. And that has not come true. Thank God that has not yet come true. But he predicted that can happen unless we wake up. He warned that is something that can happen unless we wake up. Let's hope, God forbid, chas v'chalil, let's hope God has mercy on us, and let's hope we get a chance to wake the Jewish people up before it's too late. Thank you, Kalman. We go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, one, what did you think of the city of Haifa? In English, Haifa, in Hebrew, Haifa, unquote. I loved Haifa. Well, I love the whole land of Israel. But Haifa was a beautiful city. It really is a beautiful part of the land of Israel. The whole coast, the Mediterranean coast, and the parts of northern state of Israel, the Galil and the northern areas, beautiful, breathtakingly beautiful part of the land of Israel. Haifa is a beautiful city. Now, unfortunately, it's being polluted. It's being taken over by Arabs and by African illegal aliens and all these other third world people that the evil government in Israel, all these evil governments are allowing to come in and flood into Israel. So Haifa is being taken over now, unfortunately. But when I was there, it was still overwhelmingly Jewish, and it was a beautiful city. I really loved it. Binyamin now writes, too, what did you think of Mount Carmel? Okay. Unquote. Again, beautiful. Mount Carmel, by the way, is a range. It's a mountain range that includes Haifa, includes the city of Haifa. Absolutely breathtakingly beautiful. Breathtakingly beautiful. Binyamin writes, three, what else did you do in Haifa besides take the Carmelit? Unquote. Carmelit is the subway in Haifa. I met with people. I was basically meeting with people. We wanted to organize things. I thought I would be coming back. I thought I'd be able to come back and we'd be able to build a movement and organize things. Unfortunately, I was never allowed to come back. But when I went to Haifa, the purpose was for me to meet with people and to plan for the building of chapters and eventually building an organization and a movement. But I never got a chance to be able to follow up on that, as we all know. Thank you, Binyamin. We're going now to Nekama, who writes, and I quote, in honor of Black History Month, please reminisce about Brasilia and Cleopatra Jefferson, the apes from QPTV and MNN, and your interaction with them. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's see. First of all, I don't know if people remember, I think almost everybody has seen the videos we did with the great David Ben Moshe, They're on YouTube, by the way. If you want to check them out, there are videos on YouTube where I met Brasilia. Brasilia was on a bus. She came on the bus with her friends and a huge mountain of French fries. And all of us, you know, actually, it was her friend that came on with the huge mountain of French fries. And all of a sudden, she screams out, "Brasilia, you want some French fries?" Mm-hmm. And, of course, they had to sit next to me and had to start eating the French fries, dipping the French fries into mayonnaise and sitting next to me. And it was, ugh, was it disgusting. But we have a video on that, which I urge people actually, people can go to that. It's actually, I think our enemies actually put up that video. I think it's actually put up by our enemies. But it's a video which tells the story of Brasilia. And Cleopatra Jefferson, she was a manager in a company. I was supposed to get a refund, and she was the manager in a company. And she refused to give me the refund, even though the rules of the company clearly stated she was required to, and I wound up having to go to the vice president of the company. And I think it was the vice president of the company, if I'm remembering correctly. It's been a while. And, you know, eventually I did get the refund, but I had to go through a lot of trouble just to get the refund. And she refused to give it to me. She refused to abide by the rules of her own company. And she also spoke like this. This was the manager of a company, and she was speaking in Ebonics. Mm-hmm. And again, people can see the Cleopatra Jefferson. That's a separate video. That's another video, which also is on YouTube. So you can find the videos on Brasilia and Cleopatra Jefferson on YouTube. And I thank you, Nekama, for bringing it up, because I'm glad that we can tell people on the program that they should go and view those videos. As far as QPTV and MNN and my interactions with them, you know, I remember the day we would have to go once every 3 months. Every season we'd have to go and be assigned time slots. You know, what time slot we're going to be on. QPT and MNN were the cable television stations that we were on. One in Queens, one in Manhattan. And we'd have to go, and then we'd be assigned time slots. And I remember one time I was there, they were all there waiting online to be assigned the time slots. And almost 90% of the people online there are black, because the programs are almost all given to black people there. And all of a sudden, this black woman comes in with fried chicken. She made a huge, huge pile of fried chicken so that she could give it to the staff and bribe the staff to give her a good time slot. And she did. And they took the fried chicken. They were taking it. And, you know, she made this huge thing of fried chicken. And I remember seeing every time they picked up a piece of chicken to eat it, one of the staff members, it was dripping with grease. I mean, there was oil and grease dripping from the fried. It was so greasy and so oily. I mean, it was nauseating. I wanted to throw up. It was so nauseating, and it smelled putrid. I mean, I don't know where the hell she made this. I don't know where she got it from. Probably from the jungles of the Congo. I mean, I don't know where she got this fried chicken from. It was so disgusting. You know, and then she, "Oh, you want some fried chicken? Mm-hmm, I made it myself. Oh, yeah, it's good. Mm-hmm." You know, and the staff all came running, scurrying. Oh, they see fried chicken. They all went crazy. They all came running over. "Oh, I love fried chicken. I love to get me some fried chicken. This is good. Ooh, this be good, good, good. Oh, it was disgusting. And you saw as they're eating it, it's dripping with the oil, and oh, was it awful. Really, really awful. You can imagine how sanitary the conditions are in her kitchen also. You can imagine, she didn't look like she was exactly, Miss Cleanliness either. Ugh. But that was one of my experiences. That was actually at MNN. That was actually in Manhattan at MNN. That was one of my wonderful experiences, and my interaction with those wonderful staff and the cable television programs that Jewish and white taxpayers have to fund. Thank you, Nekama. We go now to Righteous Indian Gentile, who writes, and I quote, "Have you heard Avi Lipkin? He claims that Saudis have nuclear-tipped missiles acquired from China and Pakistan," unquote. I don't believe that. In fact, I'm quite sure that that's not true. They don't have nuclear-tipped missiles yet. But, I mean, Israel would really be in bad shape if God forbid, that were true. But they have the ability to acquire those nuclear-tipped missiles. All they have to do is pay. They're willing to put up billions of dollars. China and Pakistan will sell them. And the Saudis have made it clear that Saudis have said openly that they intend to acquire that. They've said it openly. They said, if Iran goes nuclear, we're gonna do it. We're gonna acquire that. They're a little frightened because they're vulnerable and they don't want everybody to have nuclear weapons because it endangers them as well. So they're a little frightened about doing it. If Iran doesn't get the nuclear bombs, we might be able to prevent it. The key thing is Iran and their nuclear program. We have to destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. If we don't, if Iran gets the nuclear bombs, you can bet that Saudi Arabia and Egypt and every other Muslim country is going to have them. Egypt already signed an agreement with Russia and Vladimir Putin just about a week ago, to have the Russians build a nuclear bomb-making program for them similar to what they're building in Iran. So there's a tremendous danger here, and the guilty person here is Netanyahu, because he's given in to Obama's pressure, the pressure from Barack Hussein Obama and Hillary Clinton and John Kerry not to strike. He's giving in to their pressure. He's allowing this to happen. He's endangering the lives of every Jew in Israel, and he's endangering the lives of the Western world. It is essential that that program be destroyed. And that's one of the reasons why we support Ted Cruz for president, because he has said that the biggest threat to America's national security and to the security and stability of the world is the possibility of Iran going nuclear, and that is very true, because that will set off an arms race among all the Muslim states. All the Muslim states will then want to acquire nuclear bombs, and then we're really in a lot of trouble. All of us are in a lot of trouble. So Iran must be stopped at all costs. Thank you, righteous Indian Gentile. And we go now to EB22, who writes, and I quote, what are your thoughts regarding the following two organizations? One, UWI, United with Israel, unquote. Okay, let's start with them. You know, I've seen their stuff. I've even been to their, I haven't been there recently, but in the past I've been to their webpage. They're an establishment group. They say the same things that the establishment groups say, the same things that have led to so many problems for us. They want Israel to get U.S. foreign aid, which is not good for Israel. If Israel didn't get U.S. foreign aid, Israel wouldn't feel vulnerable to U.S. pressure, and then Israel could attack and destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. Israel could do that anyway now also, but even more so if they weren't getting the so-called foreign aid. But this group pushes for foreign aid for Israel. This group speaks about Palestinians. There are no Palestinians. There is no Palestine. But they over and over, you know, the whole site, they just use the term Palestinian over and over again. They're actually promoting Arab propaganda when they say that. This group speaks about moderate Arabs and the good Arabs and the moderate Muslims and the good Muslims, which is also very dangerous. The Arab world is united in its determination to destroy Israel, and the Muslim world is united in their determination to hate the United States and hate Israel and eventually conquer the world for Islam. There are no moderate Muslim countries or Arab countries. It does not exist. That's a myth. There may be individuals who were born as Muslims and who later left Islam, or who may even consider themselves to be Muslim, but in fact are rejecting what Islam teaches by not supporting global jihad. There may be a small minority that think like that. That's possible. They're not real Muslims, by the way, anymore. But there may be a small minority that thinks like that, but it's a small minority. And they're not real Muslims. And so this group does a tremendous disservice when they say moderate Arabs, moderate Muslims, or you know, tremendous disservice. Recently, they even were promoting what this guy, Yehuda Glick, who was shot on the Temple Mount. I'm sorry that he was shot. But he was promoting joint Jewish-Muslim prayers on the Temple Mount. That's a terrible thing to suggest. And he's promoting joint Jewish-Muslim prayers. What is he, crazy? And this group was also promoting it. They thought that was a great idea. So no, they're not the answer, EB. They're not the answer, I'm sorry to say. And EB now asks about Agudat Yisrael in Hebrew, Aguda Israel of America. Aguda is an organization that was formed in Europe in the 1920s to fight against the creation of a Jewish state, to fight Zionism, and to fight against the creation of a Jewish state. And they, in Israel, they have a political party. Today they call it the Torah Judaism Party. They're one of the two main factions of the Torah Judaism Party. Yahadut HaTorah in Hebrew, it's called Yahadut HaTorah. All they want is money for their institutions, and they're willing to support giving away land. They supported, by the way, they supported the expulsion of the Jews in Gush Katif. They supported the Sharon regime and were part of Sharon's government when he was expelling Jews from Gush Katif. So obviously, I don't like an organization or a movement that stands for those things. Thank you, EB. We go now to Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, which branch of Islam is more dangerous, the Shiites or the Sunnis, unquote. I don't think there's a difference. I think they're both equally dangerous. And I'm glad they're fighting each other. Thank God. I hope they slaughter each other. But they're both equally dangerous. I don't see any advantage of one over the other. They're both crazy. They're both in favor of global jihad. They're both equally dangerous. They're both completely irrational. The whole religion is so irrational. The whole religion is completely insane. The Sunnis don't even believe in free will. You know, the Sunni Muslims, about 90% of the Muslims are Sunni, by the way. Only about 10% are Shia. The Sunni Muslims don't even believe in free will. They believe everything is preordained by Allah. If that's true, why do you cut people's hands off and cut their heads off and do all these things to them? Why? If it's all preordained anyway, why punish people? It's not their fault. It's so irrational, it's so illogical, it's so cruel, it's so insane. Their religion is just completely insane. And both, there's no real difference, in my opinion, as far as the threat. As far as the threat is concerned, they hate each other, they murder each other, or kill each other. I shouldn't say murder. Murder is when you kill innocent people. They slaughter each other. But, you know, as far as the threat to us, I think the threat, I don't think there's any difference. Thank you, Maimonides. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.